This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
Illinois Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky has made an endorsement in the race to succeed her in the 9th District this fall.
The vote is 10 aye to 4 nay. Motion carries. Thank you.
Chicago city leaders moved to crack down on large teen gatherings downtown.
I've never been opposed to a curfew for teenagers. What I've been opposed to is to have unilateral control offered into one entity of government.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. It's Friday, so it's time to look back and break down the biggest stories of the week in our weekly news recap. Mayor Brandon Johnson's worried the newly passed budget will lead to layoffs if it's not balanced soon. A federal funding freeze will impact childcare in Illinois. Plus, an ICE agent shot and killed a woman in Minneapolis.
Yesterday's shooting of an unarmed Minneapolis woman by an immigration enforcement agent is reverberating across the country.
Kristi Noem and Donald Trump have told Americans to disbelieve clear, indisputable video evidence.
You have said you plan to file articles of impeachment against the Homeland Security Secretary.
People are dying and she's lying about it.
We're going to start today with the news out of Minnesota, but first, a new report just came out from the Inspector General for Chicago Public Schools. One of our panelists is here to dig in with us. Sarah Karp, WBEZ's education reporter. Thank you so much for stopping by, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
Good to see you. Now tell us, what are the takeaways from this report by the CPS Inspector General?
So this is his annual report. So it includes a lot of different investigations that his office does all year round.
Okay.
Two of the more interesting ones is he highlights a lot of fraud. And, you know, the Chicago Public Schools is a huge school district, $10 billion operating and capital budget. So there's a lot of money flowing in and out. But one of the cases that he talks about is a guy who was a principal and something called the network chief here, which is like a mid-level manager.
Okay.
He engaged in a phony billing scheme with an associate of his. And they did it here, but then what they did is he went and got a job in Indiana at a charter school in Indiana, and they did the same scheme there. He gets caught there, and he gets indicted. He was found to have stolen from there almost $1 million.
Oh, wow.
But in his plea, he mentions that, or somehow it came about, knowledge that he did the same thing here and built
messy,
the system.
Messy.
And built the system out of about $90,000. This, you know, Chicago Public Schools. So that was one of many different fraud cases that he brings up.
Oh, boy. Well, this is just one of several stories that we got into today. So let's dive in. Thanks again, Sarah.
Thank you.
All right. Also at the table to help make sense of the week's news was Jake Sheridan, who's a City Hall reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Melody Mercado, who covers the Loop, West Loop, River North, and Gold Coast for Block Club Chicago. Chicagoans are reacting to the death of a Minneapolis motorist who was shot by an ICE agent. And now for those of us who have been covering this for the last little while, it was hard for us not to notice the tragic similarities to last September. This was in suburban Franklin Park when ICE agents fatally shot a Mexican man during a traffic stop. So Jake Sheridan kicked things off with his thoughts on that.
I think one thing that really stuck out to me is how similar DHS's response to this shooting was to the shooting of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they said that the agents were acting in self-defense, and then we saw video, and it didn't really show that, or at least it wasn't so clear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just one thing that really jumps out to me.
Yeah. Immigrant rights activists marched more than a mile through Little Village on Wednesday night. And politicians were also speaking out, Jake. Former Mayor Lori Lightfoot also launched an investigation. This is into federal immigration enforcement in our city.
Yeah, so this is a couple months in the making for the former mayor. Basically, what she's doing is she's creating a space for people to submit claims and evidence of wrongdoing by federal agents so that it can be verified. Because a lot of that stuff is floating around all different parts of the internet. We see it all the time, you know, these videos, these really intense videos, among other things. And so those are going to land in one spot, a website, and they're going to be vetted so that there's some kind of record for the future on what agents have done.
I was going to say, I think it's really important to acknowledge as well that there's been efforts like this at the state level from the governor's office, also a coalition of different media groups, which include Black Club Chicago, where we've been asking people to submit videos and evidence that we ourselves as journalists and the other journalists in that coalition can also fact check and bring forward. So I think it's really interesting to see just sort of all these different folks at every level of government and journalism as well trying to start and have these initiatives to keep the government accountable.
And I think the question is in the future, once maybe perhaps President Trump is no longer in office, maybe there will be charges against people for some of these acts. So it's really important to have these videos and to be able to try and figure out who the people are.
Right.
Because, you know, you have these masked men, mostly men, I think. So yeah, it's really an important thing to keep a lot of documentation if there are ever going to be charges.
Right. Yeah, and relatedly, Illinois Congresswoman Robin Kelly is also saying that she's going to take action. What is she up to, Jake?
Yeah, she filed articles of impeachment against DHS Kristi Noem, who's, you know, the kind of the face on TV of not only Border Patrol, but ICE and a lot of these immigration efforts from the Trump administration. You know, it's not lost on me that Robin Kelly's district includes the South Shore building that was raided by federal agents a couple months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. She's also one of several Democrats running for Dick Durbin's seat, as we know, in the Senate. Speaking of Congresswoman Kelly, she was a guest yesterday on WBEZ's Say More. Let's listen.
She is an incompetent leader. People are dying and she's lying about it. She's pouring gasoline, you know, in our communities all over the United States. She wreaked havoc in the Chicagoland area, in the city itself, and in the surrounding suburbs. And she has got to be stopped.
Of course, the she's referring to is Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Congresswoman Delia Ramirez was also on the show. And in addition to Kristi Noem's impeachment, Ramirez wants other actions taken to block ICE.
We already know that Kristi Noem is coming before CHS and coming before appropriations and demanding even more money. You're talking about an agency that got $150 billion from that big, ugly bill now coming to us and asking for even more money so they can kill more U.S. citizens in our communities.
You know, Jake, with Republicans in charge of Congress, what are the chances you think that we'll see Homeland Security's funding limited?
You know, I to be honest, I think it's zero. You know, I think in the near future, as long as this Congress holds, there's really not a chance. But, you know, what Congresswoman Kelly has said is that she still wants to create a record of where she stands. So, you know, whether folks think that's a good idea or not is a different question, I think. But it's not likely to change how much money these agents are getting.
And of course, we should also mention one day after the Minneapolis shooting, another ICE shooting at a vehicle in Portland. This one left two people wounded. Now, similarly, there are conflicting reports about what exactly sparked the incident. And now, Melody, there are new developments in a lawsuit in Chicago. This is over use of force by ICE agents. What's the very latest there?
Yeah, so brought against DHS and the federal government for use of force on journalists, clergy members, and freelancers, people that are protesting. And we were expecting this lawsuit to be dropped. The plaintiffs requested it. It's very nitty-gritty, but basically the Trump administration Federal Judge Sarah Ellis had this sweeping preliminary injunction that limited what federal officers were allowed to do with tear gas and such. The Trump administration appealed to the Seventh Court of Appeals. And, you know, basically the plaintiffs moved to dismiss this lawsuit because they were worried what implications that this could have if the Seventh Court of Appeals were to basically tie the hands of the lower courts. So we were expecting this case to be dismissed today, but Judge Ellis said she wanted to hold back and make sure that all the parties were aware that this dismissal was possibly going to be moved forward, that there are serious implications. She cited the shooting in Minneapolis as an example and saying, hey, if I dismiss this case, then my preliminary injunction will basically cease to exist and offer any sort of protections. So she wants to make sure that all the plaintiffs in the case and the class action will be notified and that they agree. Additionally, she ordered the release of about 500 body cam videos that DHS has been submitting regularly and that she used in her decision for the preliminary injunction. And she believes that the public has the right to see this video. So DHS is going to have to release this video the next 120 days, in addition to numerous use of force reports.
Yeah, quote from Ellis, Judge Ellis, you know, if I dismiss this case, the preliminary injunction ceases to exist. And it doesn't give me much comfort in reading news reports that someone who was described as a legal observer was shot yesterday in Minneapolis. So that's my concern, end quote. And quite a few immigration agents arrived in Chicago in advance of the hearing, didn't they?
Right. I believe she said between 20 and 40. Wow. And so her, you know, her issue is DHS, federal agents, ICE, Border Patrol, they're still here. And, you know, do you still want this protection while they're in town? But lawyers for the plaintiffs have said it's nowhere, the actions that we're seeing now is nowhere near to like the full-on midway blitz that we experienced the last couple of months. And they say, hey, if federal agents come back in and start pulling the same stuff that they were a couple months ago, we will just file another lawsuit.
Sarah, how has immigration enforcement been impacting schools? I'm really concerned about our kids here. Are we seeing more of them not show up? Is there a drop in attendance?
So we were able to look at attendance through the entire midway blitz for that like two months. And what we saw was that right after a neighborhood is hit with some, you know, very aggressive immigration enforcement, the very next day, you definitely see drops in attendance. You know, one of the places where there was a conflict, for example, in South Chicago, where there was a confrontation between protesters and federal immigration agents. And then the very next day, you saw attendance at the nearby schools just plummet. You know, worse than, you know, virtually, like, I tried to look at, like, snow days. You know, kids just didn't come to school. But the good news is that it does seem like it bounces back. It doesn't seem like, you know, there are some kids that you know, just have stopped coming to school or whose parents are keeping them at home for the long haul. But overall, the percentages aren't down that much, but certainly those days, they're down.
You do see a difference that it's like you said, especially the very next day. You also had a story recently, Sarah. This was about an army of volunteers donating their time to make sure that kids get to school safely.
That's right. And I think that that's really a really big part of this story. And it's sort of a good part of the story. I mean, if there's any, you know, light that we can see in this situation, because people have really stepped up. I mean, one of the stories that I heard was at a school on the north side. One day, a parent was actually taken from a bus stop while waiting for the bus after just dropping her children off at school by federal immigration agents. And the very next day, very few kids came to school, but they put in this thing called a walking school bus, where neighbors, some of them who have kids in school, some of them who don't, are coming and picking up dozens and dozens of kids and walking them to school so that the parents do not have to risk being outside. Mm-hmm. And attendance has gone back up. So I think that things like this are happening all over the city to really make sure that there's not at least an impact in getting kids to school.
I've gotten out to a couple of those, and it's just incredible to see how well organized they are. I mean, there are probably hundreds of people every day in the mornings and the afternoons doing this across Chicago. It's a really impressive operation.
Yeah, it's really far reaching. I remember setting up a story for In the Loop on something totally different topic. And I remember the press person who I was corresponding with saying, "Hey, I may be delayed in responding. I've got to do this walk to school with my kids and their, you know, friends, families tomorrow." And I was like, wow, even you're taking part in this. It was incredible to see. Now, Jake, we have more news about how the federal government's impacting us here in Illinois. Now, the Trump administration's freezing $10 billion with a B dollars. This is funding that they're holding from five states controlled by Democrats. Of course, that includes us here in Illinois. Who could that impact in our area?
You know, it's going to impact child care workers, and it's going to impact families who get subsidized child care. Really those two groups.
Did the White House explain why they're doing this? Why are they cutting funding to child care?
It's tied to that controversy in Minnesota where it seems like a lot of funds earmarked for child care, for social services, were being misused. But there's no evidence of that happening here in Illinois that the Trump administration has cited. I think Governor Pritzker, the mayor, other folks here have argued that this is punitive. This is a way to sort of retaliate against a progressive or a Democratic state. Mm-hmm. And it's going to hurt a lot of people. It's a really serious thing. A lot of people rely on this to go to work, to take care
Absolutely.
Of the kids.
Absolutely. Are Illinois political leaders reacting to this as well? And is Illinois taking any steps at all to deal with this loss of funding?
Yeah, I mean, this has been absolutely hammered by folks like Pritzker and the mayor and other lawmakers across the state. One thing the mayor said the other day is that, you know, they'll look for ways to try to support child care. The mayor had put forward, I think, around $7 million to go towards raises for child care workers across the city a couple mm-hmm. months ago. That was something he touted. And I'm sure that there'll be a bunch of efforts not only to fight this in court, but also to try to get creative to make sure that childcare is supported, because this is just a totally critical service, not only to like people's lives, but also to any functioning economy. And people have to go to work. They have to have their kids taken care of.
Absolutely. And as our resident education reporter on the panel, Sarah, I look to you again, because we are also seeing dozens of schools across the state facing federal funding cuts as well. This is a separate round of cuts, much of it going to impact after school services, right?
Right. So Illinois, a not-for-profit in Illinois had this big federal grant that's like $18 million a year that went to fund things called community schools, which can pay for after school programs, but also pay for like food pantries and clothing closets and mental health services and classes for adults. So a range of things, really what a school believes that its families need.
Yeah.
In rural, a lot of these places are in rural Illinois and suburban Illinois. And one day in December, they got a letter saying, "We're discontinuing your grant," effective immediately. This is a five-year grant, of which they were in year two. So they completely expected it would continue.
So again, I'll ask, what was the rationale from the Trump administration for canceling these grants? Are they citing fraud again?
No. It's very vague. They said that this program is no longer in the best interest of the federal government, which, you know, people are sort of like, I don't know what that means. But they do point out some of the language in the grant application that they say is sort of this DEI language, like that's some of these programs support LGBTQ students or Black students or Latino students. So they do point to some of that language, but they're not really clear that, you know, that's what's not in the best interest of the federal government. And a lot of this is not supporting particular groups of students. It's just supporting kids who need support.
Everybody needs support, right?
So it's not, and then a lot of these programs are in schools that are in areas that are very Republican too. So it's really not clear what's the big
problem.
Again,
everybody needs after school care.
That's right.
This This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and five specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Jake, Chicago's budget woes continue, with Mayor Johnson now warning that there could be layoffs for city workers. Let's listen.
There were alders who chose to create projections that, quite frankly, just were not tethered to reality, quite frankly. We're going to monitor it closely, and in the event that shortfall does exist, then we're going to have to go before city council again and have another conversation about ways in which we can either mitigate the harm or have to deal with the harsh reality where people will be laid off.
So how do you think that is leaving alders feeling right now?
You know, I think for the alders who passed this budget, who were the majority opposed to the mayor, they're not buying it, because this is what he was saying before. And they plowed ahead anyways. He had said, your budget is unbalanced. And they said, no.
No, it's not.
Yeah, no, it's not. And it, that kind of is the tone right now. But
So you don't think anybody's regretting their decision? Well, because now people could get laid off, as the mayor says.
To that point, I think one thing that's really interesting that could happen soon is this budget could be tweaked. And we don't usually see the amount of tweaking, I think, that we could see this year. I think things like the video gambling proposal, that could really seriously change in some really important ways, or even the confines or the details of this debt plan, that could be really different. So I think there will be a pressure to change this budget, and there really could be the possibility of layoffs. I mean, these projections, it's not normal for projections to not be done in-house by, the fifth and sixth floor, right, City Hall, the mayor's budget office.
So if we do have these layoffs, Jake, I mean, wouldn't that have negative consequences for Johnson?
For Johnson, I mean, that's to some extent a political question. It definitely have negative consequences for people in the city who would have less services. But, I think the mayor would probably be able in some ways to pin this on the alders. I mean, it is, in a lot of ways, it's their budget. They should, wear the jacket for this, I think. Mm. They made really big decisions to pass stuff that was questioned by the mayor.
Alders also continue to struggle with the controversial teen curfew. So, Melody, the most recent proposal, we've got to keep track of the different proposals here. This one made it through the City Council's Public Safety Committee on Wednesday. What are the details of this?
Yeah, so it's worth noting that we've been talking about this for years. Forever. It's been 1,000 years.
It really has.
It feels like it. But downtown alderman Brian Hopkins has been trying to tweak the curfew for, this is going to be his third time, trying to go at it. Mm-hmm. And this curfew change would allow Chicago police to basically put a time and place curfew anywhere in the city with 12 hours notice. And this is to curb what people are calling as teen takeovers, mm-hmm. where we've seen large groups of young people gather downtown and other areas. And at times those have become violent,
right?
As we saw at the downtown Christmas tree lighting, where there was a mass shooting involving a bunch of teens and young,
right,
people.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a 14-year-old boy died because of that.
So 12 hours notice, and then the curfew itself would be for 4 hours. Is that right? For a 4-hour period?
I believe so. And the whole idea was the previous curfew that Hopkins had wanted to do only gave a 30-minute
warning, you know, before this curfew. Yeah, and it was called a snap curfew. And, you know, that did pass 27 to 22 in city council, and then the mayor vetoed it. And unfortunately, Hopkins, his proposal was not veto proof. So, you know, this passed in the public safety committee, which he chairs.
When does this go to a full city council vote, you think?
Possibly this month.
Okay.
Yeah. Most likely this month. And the question is this proposal veto proof? And he said he hasn't done the counting yet. So we don't know.
I talked with him yesterday. It sounds like probably somewhere around 30. He thinks he might be able to get to veto proof, but I think it's going to be really close. I think it's hard to imagine this getting to a veto proof majority. So the mayor's got a big decision ahead of him, probably.
Yes.
This is almost surely going to pass. It already passed. A stronger version passed, more harsh, if you may, version pass. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and Jake, you've been covering this as well as Melody for quite some time. We'll say that Mayor Johnson, as Melody just mentioned, has consistently opposed this curfew. What are the chances he's going to change his mind this time around?
Yeah, you know, he said as much on Tuesday and Wednesday. He said, you know, I generally oppose adding this extra teen curfew because the city already has a 10 p.m. teen curfew. It has for a really long time.
Right.
But, you know, what he didn't say, and I asked, was, are you going to veto this? And he said he's still looking at it. You're not going to veto it if it gets 34 votes, right? So
right.
I think that's kind of what the mayor's looking at. It's a really tough decision for him because every time one of these things happens, people blame him. People look to him. So,
Sarah, again, you cover teens, right, as our education reporter. What are you hearing about these most recent proposals?
Well, you know, teens and groups that serve teens are generally against this. One of the main reasons is because there is a high suspicion that the kids that will be targeted are Black and brown kids. Mm-hmm. And that if it was a bunch of white kids downtown, like on Lollapalooza, we don't see huge, you know, we don't see people chasing them out of downtown. And, you know, there's always this discussion of there's not that many places for kids to go. And making it less likely that kids can come downtown, which is also sort of considered a safe space in the city, even though there have been, you know, instances where things have erupted in violence. You know, I think there's a lot of questions like how fewer places can we make for teens in the city?
And, to know, there are already places downtown, such as privately owned businesses, malls, and even Millennium Park that have youth curfews that are earlier, or youth escort policies that are earlier than the city's
earlier
curfew,
than 10 p.m.
Earlier than 10 p.m., which I think is worth noting.
Can you be on Navy Pier if you're under 18 without an escort on the weekends? I know for a while you can't.
Not anymore.
Do that. And
not anymore.
Yeah,
that changed.
I think that's another place. I mean, this was a place where kids would come and hang out.
You know, this week Alderman Andre Vasquez was talking about how he would come down here when he was a kid, and he would be targeted. And sent away, or have to face some sort of curfew, while white kids doing the same thing didn't have to face that kind of scrutiny. So
that was when he was a kid, and we're still having the same discussion.
A thousand years.
Well, I am interviewing Mayor Johnson next Tuesday. This is for our monthly Ask the Mayor segment here on In the Loop, and so I'm going to make sure I ask him whether he does intend to veto this proposal. And as always, listeners, you can call in too with your questions for Brandon Johnson. Now, the same public safety committee actually chose not to vote on another ordinance. This is aimed at social media platforms. Melody, what was being proposed?
Yeah, so this is being proposed by Alderman William Hall, which is worth noting. He's a large ally of the mayor. And basically, this proposal is saying that he wants to hold social media companies accountable for allowing posts that advertise these sorts of teen takeovers in downtown or in other neighborhoods where, you know, I've actually seen myself different social media posts that say, all right, we're going to hang out at this place at this time, you know, come through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's advertised as going as late into the night. And so the idea is to hold social media companies accountable by fining them $50,000 if they don't respond to the city's request to take it down and just leave it up.
Oh, okay.
And there is so many questions about this because it's kind of, you know, what is the legality around this? And this is, and is this something that will actually work? And at the end of the day, there were so many questions. I feel like the conversations just at one point lost the plot. And so they decided to hold it in committee. And we'll see if it's something that will
Find it so hard to get to your point of like, how do you enforce this exactly? Because I've also seen some posts on TikTok of like, we're all meeting up in such and such place, 7 o'clock, be there. You're going to go after TikTok?
Right. And that question is, why shouldn't we be going after the individuals that are advertising these types of events and not the social media companies?
And Jake, we aren't quite done with City Hall, unfortunately. The mayor is going into the new year with some vacancies. He needs to fill a couple positions, including the city's chief financial officer, because she's leaving.
Yeah, and she's coming right here to Navy Pier.
She's coming right here to Navy Pier. Oh, wow. So we stole her.
Yes, all your fault. Well, so that's CFO Jill Jaworski, and she's been a really important part of the administration. You know, she's the leader of all the financial efforts, really, in the mayor's administration. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge job. But she's
really instrumental, too, during this last
Absolutely. She was in front of city council like every day for a while because, you know, during this really contentious budget process, you know, they had a lot of questions and the mayor wanted to push back and she was part of that pushback. So she's taking a job at Navy Pier. You know, it seems like, and she says she's leaving on good terms. The mayor had a lot of kind words to say about her. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of kind words to say about him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's taking a new job. It's going to be interesting to see how he fills it. You know, this is a time when you see a lot of people leave administrations. People don't stay always for 4 years. But when they get out in that last year, they try to do it, I think, generally before an incumbent declares, that they're running for office again.
Right.
So it's not, you know, a bad look.
Right. You don't feel so obligated to stick around. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
Alders are also expressing frustration with another vacancy, Jake, chairperson of City Council's Zoning Committee. What's going on there?
Yeah, that's currently an interim Alderman Bennett Lawson. And he had that role, or he was chief of staff as a worker, not as an elected, for that committee for a long time. It's such an important committee. Every building you see in Chicago goes through that committee when it gets built, when it gets updated in important ways. So, you know, development really can't happen. And, you know, this has been a spot the mayor has really struggled to fill throughout this whole administration. And, you know, the last chair, Alderman Walter Burnett, left office. Lawson became interim again. And he said, you know, I'm not going to do this forever. I'm not going to be a permanent interim chair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now he's putting his money where his mouth is. He's saying, I'm not going to hold a meeting until you make a permanent choice, Mayor. And there's a ton of infighting really between the Black caucus and the Latino caucus, because this is one of the most powerful roles in the city council. And they're fighting over who gets that spot. Meanwhile, also Alderman Lawson, who's a white person, wants it too. And so there's kind of this three-way tussle over the spot. And it's unclear what's going to happen, but it's going to have to happen soon because you can't not have meetings.
Absolutely. Yeah. 2026, Melody. It just started, but Chicago's 2027 mayoral election, it's already starting to make headlines. Fill us in.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've been hearing about Congressman Mike Quigley for a while saying that he's going to run again, you know, for many, many terms and years now. But he says he's, you know, he's actually going to do it this time around. And it'll be interesting. He said he's raised already about $250,000 in about a month and a half. And so, again, we do know that the mayoral race tends to be very, very expensive. And there are other people that are throwing their hat in the ring that already have millions of dollars of money to put into this. We have Secretary of State Alexi Julianis, who's rumored to want the role. We have Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas, who is going to throw her hat in the ring. The question is, will Susana Mendoza throw her hat in the ring? I think we have...
Jake nodding.
Yeah. I think we have some questions about which aldermen might want to throw their hats in the ring. And I think it's too early to say specifically which ones, but we know several of those members have higher aspirations. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he actually files the paperwork, gets all the signatures, but he was kind of already alluding to what his platform might be,
right,
which is, you know, cutting the city's workforce that he says has been inflated the last several years. And he also said he wants to close, quote, wildly underpopulated schools, which we know when Rahm closed a bunch of schools during his tenure, he was very unpopular.
And so, we're still paying for that.
Oh, yes.
Right, Sarah?
Yes. Yeah, and quick. I mean, by the way, as mayor, he will have no power to do that. because by then the school board will be completely elected members,
exactly,
and independent of the city. So, I don't know. What is he going
to
come in?
He'll have to do some more research before he makes his official announcement.
Sort of understand what's going on
after
here,
the March primary. Let's turn to a closer election. Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss picked up a valuable endorsement. Retiring 14-term Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky's backing Biss as her potential successor in the 17-way 9th Congressional District primary. Now, she praised Biss's support for health care expansion in opposition to the Trump administration's deportation campaign. That election is on March 17th. Let's turn back to Chicago Public Schools, Sarah. Since you brought us there, the Board of Education is investigating how certain information got into the hands of the media. What's that about?
Well, so just over the winter break, there was a leak to one of our colleagues, Fox News reporter Per Schutz, about a special meeting that was going to be held. And basically, the leak was the night before the meeting notice was posted. But the school board president was very upset that this got leaked. It was part of a document, an update for board members that he says includes pre-decisional information. And we don't know how much Per Schutz had. But anyways, the school board president said he's going to investigate how Per Schutz is getting his information. Paris gets, you know, frequently gets some information. And when, as
it's
I was...
Per Schutz of Fox.
Fox, from Fox.
Fox 32.
Right. And then as I was reporting that story, I learned that they had already had an ongoing investigation into how I got the names of the superintendent finalists. Which was back in November when I published a story saying these were the two names. And on that very day, one of them, those two candidates pulled out. And then the whole process has basically been in limbo ever since. Mm. Board members were very upset. They had signed a non-disclosure agreement and they as a whole board, want to know how we got the names.
How you got that information. I mean, so much happening here, investigating a leak within the school board. I mean, is this a sign of turmoil at the school board? The fact that they're not acting in unison here?
Well, I think it's a sign that the school board has elected members. You know, it's the first time ever that Chicago Public Schools has a board of education that has 10 elected members, 11 appointed right now, but next year all will be elected. It's a big transition. And I think that kind of tension is what's really showing up here, because whereas before you used to have a mayor who controlled the school board and things were pretty tight. Now, you did get leaks from the school, from like central office or principals, but you very rarely would get a leak from school board members.
Right.
And so I think that this is just that now there's more independent people there who have different interests. And, you know, Per Schutz is getting a lot of his leaks from, I don't know where he's getting his leaks, but the stuff that he's being leaked is sort of aligned with some of the people who are independent of the mayor, who are not aligned with the mayor.
Did any of you have trouble getting to Navy Pier today? Heavy rainfall overnight. I mean, it really caused a lot of flooding in the area. The Chicago Fire Department had to help at least two drivers out of their cars at a flooded viaduct on the Dan Ryan. Two cars were also stuck in the water near Webster and Ashland. One of our producers here on In the Loop couldn't get in today because of a cleanup in her basement. Melody, did you raise your hand?
Yeah, I mean, I live in Humble Park, and I did connect onto 90 to get to Navy Pier today. But yeah, a lot of questionable underpasses, viaducts over there where I just kind of went the long way.
Yes. Yeah, I got caught in it just a little bit. I was splashing a lot, and I was hoping that there were no pedestrians, you know, catching the wrath of my vehicle in these puddles. Yeah.
I biked here today, and I biked home last night from the Thursday night at the Art Institute.
Uh-oh.
And it was a mess. I ended up just going to a CTA stop,
Jake,
and taking the train a lot of the way there. But
oh,
like,
my goodness.
My jeans are now dry. They were not.
They were not last night.
So wet. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Well, if any of you took an Uber or Lyft this morning instead of riding your bike, you might have noticed an added fee. Jake,
yeah,
tell us the details.
So there's an expanded area for where the $1.50 fee, the congestion zone on rideshare, is going to affect. And actually, it just gets my house now near North and Western.
Ooh.
I'm going to be calling those right across Western Avenue now to avoid that $1.50. But, you know, this is one of the many different tax and fee hikes that the city council primarily, but also the mayor, proposed some of these that they pushed through. That includes your plastic bags at the grocery stores. Those aren't 10 cents anymore. Those are 15 cents now.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You know, the PPLT, the tax on leased personal property, which I think includes your Netflix subscription, among other things, is rising from 11% to 15%.
Tell us more good news, Jake. Keep going. Keep going.
They'll find more. The good news is it's going to be tough next year because it's an election year. It's really hard to pass taxes then. So you might have a reprieve then. But yeah, lots of little fees coming.
And shout out to Block Club, Melody, because your team was the first to report about Uber overcharging riders for congestion fees.
Yeah, those were, you know, Block Club's really good at getting people that DM us and and being like, hey, I feel like this is an issue. An extra $150 after hours that I wasn't supposed to be charged. And, you know, first it's one person, then it's three people, then it's 50. And then all of a sudden you have, what was it, $1.7 million that was $1.8 million that was charged incorrectly to
and
folks.
Uber said, oh, our bad.
Oops,
sorry.
We'll refund you.
It was a technical misstep, the company says, and they said they refunded all the affected riders.
Mm-hmm.
You cover the area, Melody, where some of the city's best known restaurants are. So I'm talking about West Loop included. Some like to call that Restaurant Row. I want to walk through, though, some of the notable closures that happened in 2025, along with the openings that we can probably look forward to in 2026.
Yeah, I very popular restaurant Proxy closed, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, a restaurant that I feel like this is a story that we hear, you know, many times in the last several years since COVID of restaurants trying to reconceptualize, mm-hmm. Or just honestly financial woes, or not being able to renew a lease, literally pick one of the three. And that is a description of a lot of why restaurants have closed this year. I know a lot of people were upset about Proxy. It was a very popular restaurant. They actually had just launched a new tasting menu featuring like some dishes from North Korea cuisine, which I thought was very interesting. And I wanted to try it. And I didn't get a chance to. So I'm kind of bummed about that.
And
but
Bar Tudo will now open.
Yes. Bar Tudo by Joe Flam. Chef Joe Flam, who is very popular, and that looks like a vibe. I'm not gonna lie.
Nice.
It's all day cafe. You can get all three meals there if you really want to stay that long.
Nice.
And it just seems like a really well-rounded menu, something that is inviting to the community. And I mean, I'm a sucker for good interior design, and
yes,
it looks really cute.
I love a good neighborhood hangout. And it's an all day Italian cafe.
Yeah.
Of all cafes. What's happening to McCormick and Schmick's?
Oh man, yeah.
I got to tell you how. I got to tell you, it's sentimental for me.
Yeah,
it's where my husband and I had our first date.
Oh really?
Aww.
Yeah. Well, not this location, but just the restaurant itself.
Oh, okay. I will say I went to a happy hour there like 2 years ago with a girlfriend of mine, and there was like nobody in there.
I know. So we went. So here's the thing. I've been in Chicago what 5+ years now. We finally went to the location here in the Loop in like November or December. Mm-hmm. And we said, you know what? we should start doing this now. Like maybe, you know, every anniversary or, you know, every so often, let's just like go back to this place where everything all started. And then we get this news that they're closing. But yes, you are right. That same night, I mean, I think there was one guy at the bar and like one other table of three people. Mm-hmm. And that was it on a Saturday night.
On a Saturday. And it makes me sad. That made me really sad. But it kind of tracks with what the parent company has been doing, which has been closing. They own a bunch of other restaurant names and brands as well. Yeah. And they've been closing and reconceptualizing the space. They're not going to reconceptualize the space that I know of. They're actually closing it. So now another restaurateur will have to come in and bring something in.
So we've got news in the retail store world as well. Neighbors and authors lined up Tuesday to pay their respects to Wicker Park's Volumes Book Cafe before it closes at the end of the month. But as that bookstore closes, a new chapter is beginning for Barnes & Noble. They're coming back in a big way, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. So huge retail space, 30,000 square feet on the State Street corridor, which has struggled. It's still struggling. It's to maintain retail space and you know, stores along the area. But it's 150 North State Street, I believe, near Block 37, the old Navy building, basically.
Yes.
Barnes & Noble is going to go there. It's going to be their largest in the city after it opens possibly this summer. And while that's great news for the State Street corridor, which again, like I've said, has been really struggling. It is not so great news for some of the other smaller communities that have all these independent bookstores like Wicker Park that, you know, had a Barnes & Noble open there about a year ago, and Volumes Bookstore is blaming Barnes & Noble's for their closure.
We're doing a deep dive on this Monday on In the Loop. We're going to chat about what this Barnes & Noble expansion means for Chicago's independent bookstore. So we're actually going to talk to a couple of local bookstores on the program, and we'll have the CEO of Barnes & Noble the conversation. Yeah. So you don't want to miss that.
I'm going to tune in.
Monday morning at 9. All right, the time has come. Bears versus Packers. Tomorrow night. Did any of you score a ticket?
I wish. You know what? I could have gotten a ticket, but I
how? Did, because the cheapest ticket is $400.
Well, I know some people who are season ticket holders, so they can buy that. It could have bought them at face value. But, you know, I feel like it's a little cold. I know it's not going to be like cold, but I feel like it's a little cold outside. And
It's not cold. It's just cold.
It's just cold. And also, I don't know. My husband actually went to the Browns versus Bears game that was like -8 a month ago.
And wow, that's dedication.
Yeah, that is dedication. And so I think like, you know, he wasn't really that excited about going again. I think it was a good experience, but.
But again, if you don't have the hookup like Sarah Karp, you are looking at the cheapest ticket costing you $400. Ticket prices are breaking NFL records for a wild card game. $813 is actually the average ticket price.
That's insane.
You went last weekend, didn't you, Melody?
I did. I surprised my fiance, shout out Paul, with tickets for Detroit Lions versus the Bears.
And walked out of there smiling.
I was so upset. I was like, you know, trying to do my research. Okay, Bears are doing great, obviously. We're totally going to beat the Lions. And then the first, you know, three quarters of the game, we're just sitting there like, oh, this is kind of boring. And then in Bears fashion, they were warming up for more than half the game. And then, you know, some action happened and then we lost by a...
Yeah, one person in this building was happy, and that's Patrick Smith. Yeah, he's a longtime Lions fan.
That's right.
Well, you know, Bears versus Packers, this is one of the longest rivalries in football. So hopefully, to your point, Sarah, hopefully it's not bitter cold, although snow is in the forecast. So we shall see.
Yeah, and too bad the Packers are used to snow. I wish they were like from a warm place and they had to come here and we could like freeze them out or something.
Like, yeah, take that.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations are also in order to Mike Filipiak. Mike took home the $1,000 prize in the Ben Johnson lookalike contest. Wow. Did y'all see this story?
No.
Yeah, 25 people competed for the honor at the Wintrust Sports Complex in Southwest Suburban Bedford Park. And Mike says he's going to use his $1,000 prize to, you guessed it, buy tickets for the game.
Wow.
That's
he can buy one and
you're
a quarter
need
ticket.
It my, yeah, you're going to the game by yourself.
I hope they didn't make him take his shirt off during the contest.
I was going to ask that. I feel like that's only fair.
I'm getting nods from producers. Oh, wow. Yeah, I think he did.
Awesome. Good for you.
I think that's what gave him the edge, you see.
If you look like Ben Johnson in that way, Mike, good for you.
Right.
Way to go, Bears, go. All right, we'll leave it there. That's the weekly news recap. My thanks to Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune, Melody Mercado of Block Club Chicago, and WBEZ's Sarah Karp. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.